place. I just feel that we're going no place. Why you say that work is a four-letter word? So change your mind.
You're listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO, Medford, Tufts Free Form Radio. The time is now 2.03 p.m. You're listening to Academics on Air with Jenna and my co-host Marissa, and our guest Anna just arrived. So we're going to play a song or two before we jump into it, so stay tuned. That was When I'm 64 by the Beatles. This is Jenna.
This is Marissa.
And I'm the guest, Anna.
This is our guest.
Yes, this is Anna. Yet another I'm mincing my words. Another student of anthropology. So if you love anthropology, you'll love our show. If you don't, I'm sorry, but this is the direction we've taken.
Yeah, I hope we have a dedicated following of anthropologues out there.
Is that a term?
But that's the French word for anthropologist, and it somehow just came out.
I like it. Jenna, what do you study?
I study psychology.
Oh, great.
So tangentially related, like looking at individuals rather than groups of people or society.
Yeah.
So
thank you.
Different perspectives.
Can I chime in for a second?
Of course.
This is a really exciting show for me, and I feel quite honored to be surrounded by my two radiant co-hosts in one space. Typically, I have individual shows with both Jenna and Anna, and today those worlds are colliding, so thank you for both being here.
Do you feel like you're like your two wives have found each other and like now you're like your secret's out?
Maybe.
It seems like it's like a happy meeting though. It's she's like scared found out about each other.
Yeah.
At least that's how I'm reading the situation.
I agree.
Great. So, Anna, could you just tell us a little bit about the book you're reading from today? I'm impressed that you have it here in hard copy, hardcover. Most people have just been reading PDFs, and there's something beautiful about having just checked this book out from Tisch Library. So tell us a little bit about the book and the context of how you were first introduced to the book.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like that regular listeners would be aware of this, but there was a class in the fall of last year. There was a class in the fall of this past year, meaning 2018, that was called End of Work, out of the Anthropology Department and American Studies, I believe. And it was looking at the dynamics of labor and work. And so we read this book. And the way that it's arranged is by Studs Terkel. It's called Working, and it's just a collection of vignettes. The table of contents is just like the person's name and then their occupation. When I first read it, was moved by the actual parts on people who were not working, the retirement section. So I'm going to both be reading the first couple of paragraphs of the introduction, and then I'm also going to be reading the vignette by a person named Barbara on her thoughts on not working anymore.
And Studs Terkel, that name sounds familiar to me. Is he an anthropologist, or is he just...
He's not an anthropologist, and I'm forgetting... the circles that he was in, but he writes in the introduction about how he's like a somewhat well-known / somewhat famous writer.
See, I know who he is, but I don't know like what context I know him in.
Yeah.
So maybe we could do a little background research on that and get back to everyone.
For sure.
All right, we're going to play a quick song and then we'll hop right into the readings.
Take me home. I know who I want to take me home. Take Every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end.
Just heard another. Okay. Sorry. We're getting a lot of
feedback.
Oh. Oh. Maybe don't touch it. Okay. Sorry, everyone. We apologize. Oh, do you?
Yeah. Okay. Maybe better. Okay.
Okay. No one touch
okay.
anything. Sorry about that to our listeners. Some technical issues. That was Closing Time by Semisonic, and now we're going to let Anna jump right into the reading. Oh, but I did want to mention that we did figure out who Studs Terkel is, and he was a radio personality from WFMT in Chicago, if anyone's familiar with that, among other things. But
yeah. And the author of this,
yes,
this selection.
Of course. Yes.
Great. So first I'm going to read just a really short selection, or intro from the introduction. Anyway, this book, being about work, is, by its very nature, about violence. To the spirit as well as to the body. It is about ulcers as well as accidents, about shouting matches as well as fistfights, about nervous breakdowns as well as kicking the dog around. It is, above all, or beneath all, about daily humiliations. To survive the day is to triumph enough for the walking wounded among the great many of us. And I'm going to go into this piece, which is the first of a section of the book called Reflections on Idleness and Retirement. And this vignette is on Barbara Terwilliger. She is in her 30s. She has an independent income and is comfortably well off. During her less affluent days, she had worked as an actress, as a saleswoman, engaged in market research, and had assorted other occupations. And then it goes, that was her introduction. It can be splendid not to work for a while, because it changes the rhythm. You can reflect on what you've done. There's no feeling of being indolent. I like being by myself for long periods of time and do not need an occupation. After 2 months, though, it doesn't work for me. I begin to feel the need for a... I want this to be pronounced well, Marissa.
Raison d'être.
Unless I'm in love.
Which means reason to be.
Okay. Unless I'm in love. If I should be in love, after months, I would begin to feel parasitic and indolent. What's love got to do with it? Oh, well. Love is a woman's occupation. It's a full-time occupation if you're married. Since I'm not married, I'm talking about a love affair. If you have any sort of ego, you can't make a love affair a justification for life. About work and idleness? You raised the subject of guilt. I did? I have come to some conclusions after having been free economically from the necessity of work. To be occupied is essential. One should find joy in one's occupation. A great poet can make love and idleness fructify into poetry. A beautiful occupation. He wouldn't think of calling it work. Work is a pejorative sound. It shouldn't. I can't tell you how strongly I feel about work, but so much of what we call work is dehumanizing and brutalizing. And I'm skipping around here a little bit. I really feel work is gorgeous. It's the only thing you can depend upon in life. You can't depend on love. Oh, love is quite ephemeral. Work has a dignity you can count upon. Work has to be a game in order for it to be well done. You have to be able to play in it, to compete with yourself. You have to push yourself to your limits in order to enjoy it. There's quite a wonderful rhythm you can find yourself involved in the processes of any kind of work. It can be waxing a floor or washing dishes. Thank you for dealing with me as I find what I want to talk about. Everyone needs to feel they have a place in the world. It would be unbearable not to. I don't like to feel superfluous. One needs to be needed. I'm saying being idle and leisured, doing nothing, is tragic and disgraceful. Everyone must have an occupation. Love doesn't suffice. It doesn't fill up enough hours. I don't mean work must be activity for activity's sake. I don't mean obsessive, empty moving around. I mean creating something new. Being idleness... But idleness is an evil. I don't think man can maintain his balance or sanity in idleness. Human beings must work to create some coherence. You do it only through work and through love. And you can only count on work. And that's what I have right now. There are more sections we could read at another time.
Okay, thank you, Anna. And let's go into a song and then talk about that excerpt afterwards.
Thank you. Okay, so that you just heard Taking Care of Business from Bachman Turner Overdrive. And we're back to talk about what Anna just read for us. So, you know, generally playing with themes of retirement and what the end of work in that sense means of coming to retirement.
Sorry. From my understanding, this lady wasn't technically... she still in her 30s? Right. She was like a little mid-age retirement.
Yeah, and that's part of... I was just apologizing while we were playing the past song because I got this book at a library like an hour ago and kind of like briefly picked out what passages I wanted.
After having read it before.
Having read it before, which I read it last semester, so it had been a little while. Anyway, yeah, confusing what Barbara's situation was of whether she kind of was able to just go into retirement early or whether she's taking a break from work or something.
So what brings you to be thinking about this right now?
I, especially in this class last semester, and I'm nervous to move this, but I have been thinking about when I was taking this class, you know, we were obviously talking about doing work a lot, and we did have one session on kind of retirement and not working and idleness, but I was thinking about that especially a lot because just in the past year or so, my mom has been forced into retirement due to just like health reasons. And that's been like really incredibly hard for her because I do think of her as someone maybe like more than anyone else I know is like very much married to her work and like a workaholic and like someone who feels so passionately about it. And it's been like a really big struggle, both obviously for her and then as well as for my sister and I to like figure out what life is like after she like essentially had to give up this like love. And so I kind of last semester when I had read this and then I wrote a paper on it and that specific passage that I just read, it was kind of in terms of I like interviewed my mom and talked to her about it and kind of put it in conversation with that passage. But it's been, yeah, it's been really hard and like very much made me think about how I, like now that I'm in this place of like ending my career as a student and going into my career as a non-student in the workforce as a non-student person, though I'm sure that I will be a student again at some point, or I hope to be, kind of just what I want that to look for me. And I think that seeing how hard this has been for her has made me want to care about my work less because I want to be able to have a life outside of my work in the way that I think she had less of.
Do you finish your thought first?
No.
I think that's a really interesting concept in terms of like, well, again, kind of like referring back to the passage of love and work and like it's complicated relationship because your work can be so much more fulfilling if you love it. I know from my mom really enjoys being a librarian, but you know, sometimes there's also like difficulties in terms of being able to step away from your work and maybe do something less taxing or just something that's more just enjoying it for the sake of fun. And that kind of makes me think of like, I don't know, it made me think of like tech companies specifically and like kind of like the culture that they create of like fun and stuff so that it's like you don't have to leave work. The fun's right here. And so
did you talk about that with Judy?
She's mentioned it before. That's definitely, I guess, I feel like they're trying to bring fun to work more so maybe than other companies. But I do think, you know, there's, I feel like people, I mean, everyone has a different relationship. You know, some people hate their work and some people, it's like their life. And I've, you know, some people fall somewhere in between.
Right.
So I think love and work is just an interesting kind of like pairing to think about.
Yeah.
And continuing to think about that terminology that we use around like your passion for what you do and those types of things. Yeah. I'm thinking about my stage of applying to a lot of jobs right now and writing cover letters, and that I was reflecting on a professor on wording in my cover letters. And every single cover letter, I'm going in and saying my passion is environmental education, and I'm like, you know, I have these experiences, and like that they have created this passion for this field of work, and like I'm selling myself to employers by saying I love this work, and I mean, hopefully that's true, but it is really interesting how complex that relationship is. Even, you know, before I've gotten the job, I'm saying like, oh, I promise you I'll love it. And it's really interesting that is how we work.
That's something I've noticed too, definitely, like in writing cover letters and stuff. Like when I look online for like advice, it's like you have to show that you like love the company, even though you might not know anything about it because you don't work there and you've never visited it. I mean, you only know it from this kind of like exterior perspective from their website, but you still have to kind of feign, or maybe you really do depending on the company, but you also just have to show this interest. Sometimes kind of on a level of like enamorment or something. But yeah, no, I had a different thought, but I wanted to see if anyone had other thoughts about this subject before I kind of shift it a little bit.
I think that we can talk more. When we were playing music, we were talking about specifically language of love, and how Barbara kind of uses that directly in contrast and in conversation with romantic love. But we can talk about that in its own chunk, because I think it deserves that. So anyway, you should bring up what you were talking about.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking about what the passage you read, that vignette of that person. And I kind of, I don't know, I reflected on it a little bit with myself, because like, oh, she took a break from her work and said she found it, I guess, enjoyable for a period of time. But then she's like, I gotta go back to work because this can't be a lot for a while. And I don't know, it just has me thinking about, so I have a job offer, which is exciting and nice and stuff. not bragging.
No. I was saying that in a way of like us critiquing work, and now I'm congratulating you for work, but genuinely.
Yes. But no. So it's tentatively supposed to start in like July, end of July, August, and I was like, oh, maybe I could try and like fit an internship in between that. And then I was like, you know what? Maybe it's time to like not do work for a period of time, because even at school I work, not just in like the homework sense, but like I have two jobs, and so I think just to like take a month or two to do nothing is like something I'm kind of looking forward to, but at the same time I'm like a little scared. I don't know, but also I feel like I won't have a chance to do this again unless after, you know, whenever I'm finished with this job, if I decide to take some time off. But like I feel like you're never gonna really have like this same kind of situation. And that's not to say, I don't know, a lot of people might not be able to afford to kind of take this time off, and I'm lucky that I've like saved up money and been able to do that, but it's kind of like a weird situation I find myself in now, like with a few months of free time.
Thank you for sharing that personal aspect, and I have been thinking a lot about that calendar of next few months, and for me, realizing that a lot of the jobs I'm interested in are summer programs, so it kind of makes sense for me to be looking for something immediately after graduating for the summer. But then that in itself feels so much like I have bought into this mindset of like go right from one thing to the next, and that feels scary. So I hope that if you did take a pause, that would feel really productive.
Yeah, not necessarily. I mean, I don't think. Maybe I was thinking like productive in the sense of like not just like productive in terms of like self-growth or something, not like I don't know, I don't need to put in this many hours doing something. So like productive, but like not in the traditional sense.
That's a tricky word that I threw in there.
And just can affirm that as someone who's taking like 6 months to a year off after college, that I just think that would be really good. So, congratulations.
Thank you.
So I guess we can go back to talking about romantic love. But also, if you wanted to, I don't know what the pace of this is, we could play a song first.
I think this is like a kind of like a natural breaking point, or not breaking point, but segue. So let's play a song, and then we will continue with our discussion, focusing now more so on romantic love. Okay.
Thank you.
waiting for, and my time was running wild, a million dead-end streets, and every time I thought I'd got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me, but I've never caught a glimpse of how the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take that test.
Changes.
Turn and face the strange.
Changes.
Don't wanna be a richer man.
Changes.
Turn and face the strange.
Changes.
There's gonna have to be a different man. Sides, but never leave the stream of warm and permanent sand. So the days float through my eyes, but still the days seem the same. And these children that you spit on as they try to change their worlds are immune to your consultations. They're quite aware of what they're going through.
Changes.
Turn and face the strange.
Changes. Don't tell them to grow up out of it.
Changes.
Turn and face the strange.
Changes.
Where's your shame? You've left us up to her neck.
Was Changes from the one, the only, David Bowie.
Should we do a PSA really quick?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, I found one kind of pertinent, dealing with AARP, which I should really know what it's
American called. Association for Retired People.
Yes.
Nice.
Thank you. So here, driver, personal shopper, finance manager, nurse, and daughter. At AARP, they understand the many roles caregivers play. That's why they created aarp.org/caregiving. It's an online resource center that connects you with the experts and other caregivers. Together, we can better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiver to learn more. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Thank you. Which is important things.
Yes. You also get a lot of perks as being part of AARP, like discounts and stuff, so yeah. Shouldn't be too scared of it if you're nearing the age where you are eligible to join.
Yeah.
I recently had a professor, for some reason, exclaiming in class that like he started getting AARP mailings, and he was really stressed out by it.
I'm thinking, what, it was this, and then what was the other thing that I was like, oh wow, your professor was talking about that? It was earlier today, wasn't it, that you mentioned something that your professor was talking about, and I was like, oh.
I don't know.
Oh, gosh.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. So, we were going to talk about the way Barbara talks about love and work. Because we were talking about, Marissa was mentioning how she feels like she needs to say that she's, like, passionate about this work. And I think, being able to like love your work is such a, I mean, definitely like an important thing, but also like a narrative that I think is fed to us a lot. But even beyond that, I think that people often feel like, you know, like, who has the time? And, like, especially, I think, in terms of talking about women, it's like, who has the time to, you know, be in a full-time relationship and love someone deeply and also, like, love their job? And, you know, I think that Barbara, in this piece, was really talking about, you know, you can't depend on love. Love is quite ephemeral. Work has a dignity that you can count on. Work has a game, has to be a game in order for it to be well done. So in the sense that, you know, she's kind of saying that love can replace or be better than romantic love, which I think is dangerous. But maybe I'm just a combination of someone who's feeling a little disenchanted by work right now and also a hopeless romantic. So it can be a little bit of both. I don't know. What do you guys have any thoughts?
I can see it going either way in terms of like if you love your work and it could be really rewarding in that sense, yeah. But also, I don't know, to throw everything both emotionally
right.
and like mentally into one kind of endeavor is
right.
dangerous. Like
right.
I don't think it's, you don't necessarily want to put all your eggs in one basket.
I agree.
So
yeah, and I think that speaks to both. And actually, while we're talking about things to read and media to consume, I am always, whenever the opportunity comes up, trying to suggest to people to listen to this podcast called Against the Couple Form by Bitchcast, and it kind of talks about. I'm sorry. I think that. It's a name.
Okay. I just don't want to get fined.
Yeah,
it's okay.
Anyway, about kind of the ways in which it's dangerous to think about relationships and monogamy and romantic love in the ways that we do and how that kind of is really restricting and also... I don't know, unhealthy. We've talked about this. I remember we were walking in that park in Needham, and we talked about this podcast together. And you don't remember that, but that's okay. Anyway, I think that this kind of binary where we're talking about, like, work or love is also kind of speaks to as much as the unhealthy ways that we think about work, but also the unhealthy ways that we think about love, and that they have to be like all-consuming. Either of them have to be all-consuming, which neither of them should be.
Yeah, I'm just reminded of that quote, like, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life.
Yeah.
Oh wow, I'm thinking about how also life is good, which we are avid consumers of
yes.
in this room.
Their
slogan is do what you like what you do. And
sure.
So I think that, I mean, that's very similar to what you just said, but this idea of...
Yeah. No, but I really like what you were saying kind of about just like we think of both love and work as all consuming.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's dangerous to think that way.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I don't know, that's how I've really thought about it or how I've been kind of exposed to those types of things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of like, I don't know, people who work in like consulting or like finance or stuff, like
mm-hmm.
their first jobs, they're working like
mm-hmm.
well, I don't know, 60-80 hours, I'm not sure like what, how long, but they're working long hours a week because they think, you know, they're going to be making lots of money and
mm-hmm.
it'll be worth it one day because they won't be having to work as much and they'll
mm-hmm.
be able to have more leisure time and stuff. So it's interesting to think about like long-term payoffs and
mm-hmm.
stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I was also trying to think conversely, so we are talking about work in terms of love, but like love also in terms of work
mm-hmm.
and how
mm-hmm.
I think that definitely kind of, they have those, I don't know what the word is, the duality of those
right.
relationships.
Yeah, and I mean, this is branching off from romantic love, but in terms of love being work, I've been thinking about that in terms of just in the past couple weeks of the semester, you know, I've been having to go home more and just like take up more headspace in terms of taking care of my mom, and I had a like day or 2 day a week job at a coffee shop at True Grounds, And, you know, I quit that in the past couple of weeks, and I also have just been kind of reevaluating how much time I can take up being a student, because my love and my relationship for my mom is taking up a lot of time, and, you know, that work has had to be prioritized over other forms of work that I'm doing. And so just all to say that love is a lot of work.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I have a different topic.
Yeah.
And I mentioned this briefly to Anna. I went to the School of the Museum of Fine Arts last semester during an exhibit they had about capitalism.
Do you mean just the Museum of Fine
Arts? No, the School of the Museum. Okay, the School of the Museum of Fine Arts, which is associated with Tufts, has a small rotating exhibit.
Okay. Okay.
And there was a there was a component of this exhibit that was a binder that you could interact with that had like laminated sheets of paper in it that were all, I think they were recreations or like an artist's imagining of letters that everyone in an office wrote to their coworker on the day of their coworker's retirement. And I think the evocative point of this was that all of these letters were talking about like, oh, you can finally do what you love, like you're free now, and how scary that is, and how I'm like, at the same time as we are problematizing a deep connection between love and work, like I'm grateful to be right at this point going into a career that I am expecting to enjoy mm-hmm. doing, and like for a range of reasons there are people who probably don't feel like that's what they're doing. And yeah, so just thinking about what is this mentality around like the supposed freedom or like freedom of time to do leisure activities that are, you know, supposedly you would love much more, that is the culture of say a retirement party. And I looked up playlists about retirement before this show, and there were actually more playlists about retirement than for any other show theme that I've looked up across the semester, because they were all for like, oh, play these at your retirement party.
Such a big celebration.
Yeah, because it's a celebration. And I thought that was fascinating that before I was typing in like, you know, like environmental chemical songs and like there's no playlist about environmental chemicals, but there are certainly playlists and people are going to be playing music and dancing and celebrating.
Yeah.
And a lot of those playlists were very aged. You could tell a generation that listened to a lot more like Frank Sinatra and stuff. But anyway, so I am, this is a comment more than anything, but I'm interested in thinking about, even though it wasn't directly Barbara's point, you know, love of retirement or like mm-hmm. what would be done in retirement mm-hmm. that Barbara finds like isn't that doable for her after
yeah.
a period of a few weeks or yeah. months or whatever she says.
Yeah. And also, I just, because this is so poignant, I was at a small party last night that I didn't stay. I was there for like 10 minutes. But I was in a conversation with someone who included a person who graduated, I don't think last year, I think 2 years ago. But someone asked her, like, how are you doing? Like, how's your job? How's life going? And she was like, you know, it turns out it's not always great to do something that you like. And that was scary. Anyway, yeah. Interesting as you know, we're entering this time in our lives, especially I think at this first juncture where we're up going into careers for the very first time that's not being a student, that we're really hoping to do something that we really like, and scary to think that would be not all that we hope for.
Mm-hmm. Something I've kind of been struggling a lot with in my job search and stuff is I find kind of like a conflict between something or an area I think I'd be passionate about or be like mm-hmm. really could get behind the mission of is usually not as well paying as mm-hmm. something maybe more monotonous or kind of, just like more bland, I guess, but is higher paying, and just kind of trying to reconcile, like, oh, it'd be nice to be passionate about this, but, you know, I might be sacrificing a higher income, and maybe with that income outside of work, I could be using that money to devote myself more to things I could be passionate about. I don't know. It's just I go back and forth a lot with that myself, as like in terms of what I think, I guess, is the which direction I'm pulled in more.
Yeah.
And also just thinking about like labor in terms of like unpaid internships and stuff, because a lot of, I don't know, I'm not so much looking at internships now, but there are a lot of unpaid internships opportunity out there, and I think that it's kind of ridiculous that people expect labor for free, even though you might be getting something out of it in terms of experience and networking. I think you need to pay your workers.
And also just how wildly, like, that cycle, like, really just reinforces classism,
Who can afford those internships and stuff.
I mean, I'm sure that we're all familiar with this and have thought about this, but it does upset me thinking about unpaid internships and who we're allowing to get skills and experience, and anyway.
So we're coming up on 10 minutes left in the show today. I'd be happy to, you know, talk a little more if there are closing thoughts that we have about work and this excerpt from Studs Terkel. I just had to look it up. And then play a few more songs and close out the day. So any thoughts you have right now, Anna, about this piece and how it's informed your view of work?
Mostly I'm just glad that I had an excuse to take this book out of the library again, and it reinforced that I do want to read all of it. I mean, we weren't assigned, nor did I do reading of the entire book for this class, but I think that, I mean, there's such a plethora and diversity of stories in here. I would recommend anyone listening to read it, because you can read about anything. I mean, in the table of contents, it has all of the different occupations. And, you know, I was actually considering, I mentioned to Marissa before the show, I was like, you know, so I'm deciding between the vignette on retirement or the vignette on a sex worker, because that person also had a really interesting piece, and she was like, oh, well, that was last time with Judy. Yeah.
We have kind of covered that.
there's all the greatest hits. There's sex worker, car salesman, hairstylist.
Ooh, car salesman.
Bookbinder.
That would be really interesting.
Strip miner, telephone operator, farmer, spot welder, poet, librarian. Anything you could ever want.
To add something that I'm just thinking of now, and Anna, I know you've seen this book. I don't think that you have, but my cousin wrote a book about artists, primarily artists and makers in Cuba, and this table of contents is almost formatted the same way. I didn't remember that connection before, but it basically it's like, you know, name of person and then all the same things, like bookbinder, like farmer, all of these types of works that are made. I mean, in her case, in this book, it's more crafts. But many of these seem like that as well, and that's fascinating, and I really would like to compare these vignettes and how... And in my cousin's book, it's more focused on a culture of do-it-yourself, like a DIY culture revolving around, in, like, you know, in good environmental use of materials that might not always be accessible, but also, I think, probably talking about how people got into this work and what that work means to them, and... Interesting parallel.
When you showed that book to me, I was very sharply reminded of this, and I continue to think that that book and your cousin are very cool.
Cool.
Well, thank you, Anna, for being on our show today.
I'm so
I don't mean to cut the conversation short, but we are getting close on time. So you've been listening to 91.5 WFO Medford, Tufts Free Farm Radio. This has been Academics on Air with me, Jenna.
And me, Marissa.
And if you're interested in being a guest, please feel free to reach us at academicsonair@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Our inbox is ready and waiting.
ready and empty and waiting.
that too, yeah.
Okay, I want to play a bit of a spoof song. It's called Retirement Day. Maybe we'll cut it short and play a good one to end out the hour. So thank you all, and have a good afternoon.
Off to work each day, 'cause over the years you've paid the cost.